This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
This is Tim Russ, Lieutenant Commander Tuvok on Star Trek Voyager. And you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Kay Shaw, and with me as always are
Zachary Frueling and
Suzanne Williamson.
So over our first four episodes, we've spent quite a lot of time talking about one particular pairing on Voyager. We're not going to talk about them today. We're going to talk about
what?
Another pairing today. No, we're not. We're not going to talk about them today.
No,
we're going to talk about someone else today. We're going to talk about another pairing. We're going to talk today about the Doctor and Seven.
Oh, I guess that is acceptable.
So, initial thoughts on the Doctor and Seven.
Well, you guys, I know there are some people that don't like the Doctor Seven, the idea of a Doctor Seven relationship. Some people find it, they get a little weirded out by it. I think, you know, they think of Seven as kind of emotionally immature, and they think of the Doctor as being, you know, equally emotionally immature for different reasons. They both have some development to do. And so the idea of a Doctor Seven relationship kind of weirds some people out. And there are other people, I think, that don't like the Doctor Seven relationship because of what it did to the character development of other characters in Voyager. In season four and onward in Voyager, the Doctor and Seven and Captain Janeway get a lot of the character development, a lot of the screen time, to the detriment, some people think, of some of the other characters. But generally, those issues aside, I'm kind of a fan of the Doctor and Seven. I think they've got spectacular on-screen chemistry, and clearly they've got a personality match, if not a romantic match, that never really comes to fruition. But I love seeing the Doctor and Seven on screen together. Some of Voyager's most entertaining, sweetest moments are with the Doctor and Seven.
Well, I do like the Doctor and Seven relationship. It would be my second favorite after that relationship that I'm not supposed to talk about this week.
The relationship that shall not be named.
Yes, that one. JC yes. Forever. But the Doctor and Seven just play off of each other so very well. And I don't get how people would say it would creep them out. Both being emotionally stunted. It's like a couple of teenagers. But yeah. Without, you know, the hot pants. It's that type of thing.
Yeah, I really do agree with that, Suzanne. They are a lot like teenagers. That's a really good way of describing it. Because I think although there's obviously romantic feelings there, definitely from the Doctor's point of view. Also, I think from Seven's, but it's not as obvious. But there's an innocence to it that I find very endearing. There's something incredibly innocent about all of their interactions. It's just all very sweet. I really like that.
I think it's definitely reciprocated by Seven. She did buy him a new tricorder after all.
And she did kiss him on the cheek.
That is true. But we'll get to that later.
Trying to spoil everything.
So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about our favourite Doctor and Seven moments. So everybody's written a few down. I think we went with five. And we're going to talk about what our favourite Doctor and Seven moments are and why we like them. Who wants to start?
So I'll go ahead and start us off. Although my picks are in no particular order, it just so happens that the first on my list is probably my favorite of the five that I wrote down, and it's probably one that's on all of our lists, so I'm just going to get it out there from the beginning. Number one on my list is the Doctor and Seven singing You Are My Sunshine from Someone to Watch Over Me.
I have that on my list as well, although I broadened it to all of someone to watch over me that entire episode.
That's cheating.
So
that's
what?
Not a moment.
So
that's
what?
Like an hour's
it's,
worth
it's
of moments.
It's a really long moment. Really long moment.
45-minute moment.
Hey, those are the best kind of moments.
Well, there is this inherent ambiguity. Like how long of a moment counts as a moment, right? Can you have three moments inside the same episode, or can you? Is that one long moment? I've had long moments, don't get me wrong, but that seems like a really long moment.
Well, I didn't actually have the singing moment on my short list. I had it on my long list, but I didn't have it on my short list.
Why not?
Really? It didn't make your list at all?
I had a really long list, and I had a really hard time trying to narrow it down. And I figured one of you guys would pick it, so...
I'm really surprised, because I think if you asked, like, 10 people who like the Dr. Seven idea, this would be on most of their lists, I think. I'm frankly really surprised, Kay.
I tried to pick some that were maybe not quite so obvious.
I am totally open to the idea that my picks were obvious picks.
Me too. Mine were obvious.
You can just call Suzanne and me Captain's Obvious.
Captain's Obvious.
Together, Captain's Obvious. So I think for each of these scenes, there's a reason why they work. And I think this scene works for me for a couple of reasons. One, I think the Doctor and Seven have something to learn from each other. And this is a theme throughout their quote-unquote non-relationship, right? They constantly can help each other grow and learn and develop. In this case, the Doctor is teaching her to sing. It's just a sweet thing that he can teach her. They're learning together. It's a fun activity they can do together. They clearly enjoy spending time together on these things that are, you know, kind of inconsequential. It doesn't affect anything else on Voyager. It's just a pure character moment, and they seem to have real chemistry when they're doing things together, even little things like practicing singing.
And they're in perfect harmony.
You didn't go there.
I did.
Perfect harmony. Well, that's totally Suzanne because of Seven's vocal processor. You know that.
I know. But it still works.
Yeah, it's a great scene. I really like that scene. I think the best part of it for me is the moment where the Doctor kind of has a little realization. Where he's singing the song and then he looks at her and he's like, okay then. That's how I feel about you. I didn't see that happening. Mm-hmm. The rest of us did, but he didn't.
I mean, I think everyone's had a moment like that, right? Where you experience some sort of illumination or some sort of attraction and the other person is totally clueless, but there's a revelation and it's all non-vocal and subtextual. And, you know, if you blink, you miss those kinds of moments. And I love that this scene just drew attention to one of those moments and lingered on it for a while.
Yeah, especially because although we're looking at the Doctor and we're not really looking at Seven, it's kind of made obvious that she's not aware of it either, which I like, because I don't think she's very good at cueing into stuff like that. So
no, anything dealing with human emotions, she has no clue.
Nope.
Subtlety is not Seven's bandwagon.
Nope.
It's not her forte.
It isn't. Bless her. So while we're talking about someone to watch over me, and since Suzanne picked the entire episode as her moment, I did actually have a different scene from that episode on my list. So the scene from that episode that I did pick and put on my list was the scene where they dance together.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's on my list. In fact, we got to get all of these... Yeah. Someone to watch over me.
We should talk about this episode as a whole, yeah.
that was on my list as well.
So I should have put it down.
But you could have counted it as more than one.
So for me, this episode isn't just about the dancing scene, though. I love the exchange they have when they're talking about the purpose of dating and the fact that Seven doesn't like small talk. She prefers people to be direct. And you're like begging for the Doctor just to come out and say what he's feeling and thinking. But of course, it doesn't happen. But that whole scene I count as a moment, this conversation about dating and the dancing. That's one. Not quite as long of a moment as the entire episode, but it's a good, 5-minute moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like, the guy whose name escapes me, actually, that she was on the date with.
Lieutenant William Chapman, that's it.
Yeah, so he leaves, and then Seven's kind of like, I failed at this, and then the Doctor sort of tries to console her a bit, and then we get this little bit where she tries to make a joke, which really amused me quite a lot. My first date was certainly short. And then he's like, was that a joke? Lesson 6, beguiling banter. I just really like that.
Well, there's a reason I picked the entire episode as my favorite moment. And it's because of the corollary between this episode and it's shadowing one of my favorite movies, which is My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
And the Doctor taking on the role of Colonel Henry Higgins, and Tom Paris is Pickering, and of course Seven is Eliza Doolittle. Just all the similarities in there, and it just brought back that love of My Fair Lady to me and put in some Star Trek. So it made it better.
So I'm embarrassed to say I haven't actually seen that movie.
No. You must see it. Yep, it is your homework.
Yes. Writing that down right now.
Go home and watch that. No, I think Someone to Watch Over Me is a great episode. And I think it's probably the episode that everybody instantly thinks about whenever they think about Doctor and Seven. So
yes.
So we've got that out of the way. Now we've got to dig deeper now.
There's a lot more than just that. Suzanne, what's your next pick?
My next pick would be Seven's fan letter to the Doctor in Virtuoso.
That's on my list.
Good pick.
And just her using that letter to sort of buck up his spirits after he was tossed aside by that nasty race that just wanted to use him for his voice until they found something better.
There's so much inside that episode that really reveals how much Seven cares about the Doctor. I have another pick from Virtuoso. It's not exactly the same moment, but my pick from that episode was when Seven was being angry with him for considering leaving Voyager. She's really hurt and angry that he would consider leaving her friendship behind. But on your rubric, Suzanne, that counts as one entire moment, the whole episode. So this is the same moment.
You guys are cheating so badly. I can't believe that I worked so hard to whittle this down. And you guys have just cheated. You just cheated.
What are you going to do about it?
I'm going to do my indignant face.
Okay, did you do
face with a British accent?
Yes. Yeah. I do all of my faces with a British accent.
What's interesting to me about Virtuoso is that I actually really don't like Virtuoso as an episode. The whole idea of the Doctor singing this race that is, you know, never heard music and captivated by the Doctor. None of that. I mean, it's amusing, but it doesn't really grab me and it isn't very plausible. But there's so many sweet little moments involving the Doctor and Seven in this episode. We got at least two moments out of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I really love that end scene there. And I actually think that shows a bit of subtlety from Seven that we don't normally see. The fact that she doesn't say, I wrote you some fan mail, the way she presents it, the way she comes in, she goes, I've got this fan mail and this is what it says. And he's like, I'm not interested.
Well, it's actually remarkably theatrical for Seven. Yeah, Seven doesn't really go with that. She puts on a little performance for the Doctor there.
I really like the way that that's presented. And yet, although it's not what you'd normally expect from her, it still comes across really, really Seven. You totally believe that that's something that she'd do. It's just lovely. And then when she says, it's signed 7 of 9, tertiary adjunct of Unimatrix 01, I'm just like, there she is. There she is. It's lovely. It's just really lovely. You can just imagine her like this sort of 8-year-old who introduces themselves with all their middle names. That's whatever I think whenever I hear her say that. It's like, oh yes, my name is, you know, Daisy, Violet, etc., etc., and I'm 9 3/4 or something. And it's just like she has to say it every time, the whole thing.
Do you guys remember that episode of The Next Generation where Data is learning stand-up comedy?
Yes.
I'd like to see 7 of 9 learn stand-up comedy. I could see her giving those lines with Borg precision.
I would say she'd have better timing.
So my next favorite Dr. Seven moment is actually unique amongst my 5 picks because it doesn't actually have Bob Picardo in it at all. This is when the Doctor takes over Seven's body and we get to see Jerry Ryan acting out the Doctor. So it is technically it's a Dr. Seven moment, even though we don't have Robert Picardo. And it's so brilliantly acted and so brilliantly done. That's one of my favorite Dr. Seven moments.
Yeah, Jerry Ryan rocked that performance. She got his mannerisms, his speech patterns, everything down.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
I can only imagine how much practicing it took to be able to channel the Doctor that way.
Yeah, you absolutely believe that it's him. It's totally believable. Totally believable. I do have a scene from that episode on my list.
So do I.
It's not when the Doctor is in her body, though.
Oh, the Doctor's not inside her in this one?
Nope.
What is your scene?
It's actually the closing scene from that episode.
That's the one I had on my list, too.
Is it the one you have as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous scene. When she comes in with the food and the wine and...
And just describes it all to him.
Yeah.
It was shared experiences.
Very sweet. I really like that. I like that a lot. I really like the bit where she he says, oh, but you, what about the wine? It doesn't agree with you. And then she says, well, if I'm sick, I won't have very far to go. That's nice.
Yeah.
Now, that's a really lovely scene, actually, because she gets so annoyed with him in that episode. Probably with good reason, because, you know.
Well, yeah. Indulging on too much cheesecake.
He does take some liberties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really nice when she comes back at the end and she's like, yeah, you were right. Maybe I take life a bit too seriously and I need to actually start trying to enjoy things. I like that a lot. Well, the next one that I had was from Barge of the Dead, where the Doctor and Seven sing together in Klingon. I really like that scene. There's just something incredibly pleasing about it.
Well, everything's better in Klingon.
In the original Klingon.
Yeah, I almost put that on my list, but I decided not to. I decided I already had a singing moment.
Yeah.
Got to mix it up a little bit. So I like someone to watch over me just a little bit more for a singing moment. So that one didn't make my list.
There's something just really compelling about that scene. I don't really know what it is, but I love it whenever I see that scene.
It makes me giggle whenever I see it.
I always find myself rewinding it a few times and watching it again because I just really like it.
It's just such an absurd scene. You've got a former Borg drone singing in Klingon. And how could you not love that?
Yeah.
That could only happen on Voyager. That doesn't happen on the next ship. We don't get Hugh singing in Klingon for Captain Picard. This is definitely a Voyager-ism.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm trying to visualize that. I think I'd like to see that, though.
Yeah. Setting off. Asian Tafe Deja E. Age Dog So Ta Gaspa Scral Bag Tea.
I could actually see Captain Picard as Locutus busting out in song, but not Hugh.
I would say my next moment would be the kiss in Tinker Tenor Doctor Spy. Even though Seven says it's just a platonic gesture, I don't believe her.
Yeah, I like that moment. I didn't actually have it down on my list, I had it on my long list.
If Seven's looking for an excuse to kiss the Doctor, that's not platonic.
Not at all.
And she says, oh, this is not an invitation to paint me, or whatever, however she puts it. I just read that as holodeck, 1900 hours.
Clothing optional?
Clothing optional.
And it looked like they stole the couch from Titanic.
Yes. I did actually have a bit of a Titanic parallel moment there. Because there's the whole drawing scene in Titanic as well, isn't there?
Yeah, totally. I truly don't know this. Is that intentional? Was this a riff on Titanic?
I don't know.
It could have been. It was about the right time period. We needed to kind of do the mental math. Titanic came out in, what, 97?
Draw me like one of your French girls, Doctor.
Yeah, 97.
So this could have been after Titanic, right?
I think it was. Well, it's season 6.
I think so. Yeah.
So it would have been, yeah. That's really... Yeah. I've never thought about that before. We need to do some research. Quick, ask Larry Nemechek.
So if that's a genuine riff on Titanic, don't you think they should have ended that episode with the Doctor and Seven singing My Heart Will Go On?
I'm flying, Doc.
Only if they were standing on Janeway's ship sailing Lake George at midnight with some champagne.
They're in Voyager's equivalent of 10 forward, you know, the very front of the ship singing My Heart Will Go On.
Yep, that's a mental image.
There you go. So the idea of a Titanic Voyager Doctor Seven mashup doesn't work for you guys?
No, because then one of them dies.
That is true.
I don't want that.
Yeah. It's probably the Doctor, isn't it?
So the Doctor would be decompiled.
See, now I'm picturing like old Seven of Nine at the end of Titanic. You know, she's got the Doctor's medical tricorder in her hand and she lovingly tosses it over the side of the ship at the end of the episode.
Oh, no, she has the mobile emitter.
She takes the Doctor's mobile emitter and throws it overboard.
Perfect. I love this. This is amazing. I'm also picturing the moment where, you know, she's lying on a piece of broken hull plating, holding his hand. He's dangling into, like, the black hole.
Hold on, Doctor.
Hold on. And he's gradually decompiling from the feet upwards.
Wow.
That is amazing.
That is the best mental image ever.
So the next one on my list is from the episode Timeless. It's just a little moment when Seven has had a little bit too much to drink. She's a little tipsy, and she puts her arm around the Doctor and says, "You've always been so nice to me. We are as one."
Yeah.
We are as one.
We are as one.
That was on my list too.
You are my mentor.
That was totally on my list. I love that moment.
And that is a genuine moment. Not an entire episode. That is a genuine moment, Suzanne.
A sweet little moment.
A sweet little moment, yes.
That was only going to be, you know, the one moment from Timeless anyway, because aren't they all dead for the rest of the episode?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, apart from Harry and Chakotay, the rest of them were all dead.
Like Voyager's best moments, it never really happened. So.
It did really happen.
Oh. I guess the Dr. Seven moment did happen, right?
But the everybody dead didn't before they, you know, said, to hell with the Temporal Prime Directive.
Yeah.
So again, I'm not sure I have much to say about this moment. I think it's just a cute, sweet moment with great acting, great intonation. It was just a well-done moment.
It's really nice, yeah.
And it's interesting to know that she can get drunk off of one glass of champagne.
Yeah, the Borg can't hold their liquor, right?
Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
Well, it's nice because, again, like, you know, when we then get the later on episode that we already mentioned, where they have the scene at the end in Body and Soul,
mm-hmm.
it's referred back to, well, are you going to be all right?
Continuity.
Are you going to be all right having that wine? Because, you know, we all know what happened last time. We are as one. So, yeah, I like that as well.
So I did cheat and I had one more pick, even though we were only supposed to pick five. I did actually bring six. And the last one on my list is from Renaissance Man, when the Doctor confesses his true feelings for Seven of Nine under threat of being decompiled.
That scene is hilarious.
That is a good one.
Yeah. No,
just spilling all of his dirty secrets at that moment.
Yeah, it's brilliant for other reasons. I mean, it's brilliant not just for the Doctor and Seven, but when the Doctor has to tell Seven how he really feels before he's gone for good, before he decompiles from the feet up.
Yep. and then everyone else is like, oh my god! And then B'Elanna's like, it's fine, he'll be back in a minute. I fixed him.
That's what they needed at the end of Titanic. They needed a reset button at the end of Titanic.
Yes.
They should have done it Voyager
style. That
is
very true.
Well, they kind of did. Because when Kate Winslet's character dies, she goes back and meets up with everybody that died on the Titanic.
Yeah.
It's a reset button. My mind is blown.
It is a reset button.
You're saying Titanic got it from Voyager.
They stole it.
Stole it from Voyager.
Titanic reset button.
Yeah, I think that's legitimate.
Well, the last one on my list isn't really a moment per se, but just a neat thing that happened. And that would be when they did kind of procreate by transporter accident in the episode Drone. I just thought that was kind of cool. They had a somewhat kid.
It's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Who then sacrificed himself.
Very interesting concept.
But it's a little dissatisfying because you want to see a Dr. Seven relationship, right? It's not enough just to procreate. You want them to...
It's a start.
Get together.
And I'll take a start.
Yeah.
Literally baby steps. Got it.
Ba-dum-ba-dum.
Well, I have one left on my list. On my list of five, because I did not cheat. But I'll come to all the others that I've got in a minute.
Miss, I brought 32.
Well, I wasn't going to say all of them. I did whittle it down mm-hmm. to five. The other one I had on my list actually was from Survival Instinct, which is Series 6 episode. So this is the episode where we get all the other drones from Seven's former...
Unimatrix.
Yeah, Unimatrix. That's it, isn't it?
That's one of my favourite episodes.
Yeah. Three of nine and four of nine. Yeah, I really like the episode. But there's a scene in there between Seven and the Doctor, which I love, which is where she walks into sick bay and she says survival is insufficient. It's when they're talking about whether they're going to separate them completely from each other, but they won't survive mm-hmm. for longer than sort of maybe a month or something, or send them back to the collective. And they're basically debating it. Seven says she wants them to be separated and she wants them to experience individuality. And she actually persuades the Doctor by the end of the conversation. And I just really, really like that conversation. Yeah. She just gets so passionate and it's just a really intense conversation and I really, really like it.
Yeah, she finally understands what it means to be an individual.
Yeah.
And wants them to experience that.
It shows us how far that she's come.
Oh, yeah.
From the Borg that was screaming, send me back to the collective back in season four. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. And I really like how he ends the conversation with the same line that she starts it with, survival is insufficient. I like that a lot. It's just a really powerful scene. So it's not so much a relationship scene, but it's just a really, really powerful scene between the two of them that I really like. And it's one that sticks in my head.
There was no requirement to stick to relationship scenes, but we did have a few relationship scenes in there.
Yeah, I mean, those are mostly the ones that we've picked out. I think inevitably because they're the sweet scenes and the sort of emotional scenes. But there are some really powerful scenes between them at other times as well.
Well, the Doctor and Seven, they have conflicts too. I mean, it's not all saccharine when the Doctor and Seven are together. They've learned how to kind of natter and nag at each other like Frasier and Niles in Frasier, right? They natter, and the nattering shows how much they actually care about each other. So, Case, Suzanne and I both cheated a little bit. I cheated by bringing 6 picks instead of 5, and Suzanne cheated by calling an entire episode a moment. You cheated by bringing 32 moments. You've got a few more moments on your list than we do. Why don't you tell us a few of your honorable mentions?
Okay. Well, there's a scene really on it. It's actually one of the first proper interaction scenes that we see between Seven and the Doctor, where they actually start the social skills lessons idea for the first time. And it's in the season 4 episode Prey. And Seven has this pad, and she's reading out really, really deadpan all the phrases that the Doctor was using when he was practicing his social skills with Kes earlier on. And the way that she reads it is just hilarious. I love that scene. "Please remain still so that I can treat your injuries. Thank you. I'm sorry. Did that hurt? I will try to be more careful." And it's just sort of all that type of thing. And it's really funny. And then the Doctor gets to carry on. She's like, "I'll be the nurse, you be the doctor." And he's sort of reading it out. Mm-hmm. And then they're talking about the hyperspray. "Pass me the hyperspray." And then it says on there, "Oh, you look lovely today." So she reads that out to him. And he's like, "Oh, thank you." And she's like, "This lesson is terminated."
I love that part.
It's just so fun to see actors acting about acting.
It's absolutely brilliant. But then he persuades her that there's like benefits to doing it. And I really like the fact that at the end, after she's agreed to take the notes and read them, as she's walking out, she turns back and she goes, "Have a pleasant day." I love that line. So that scene is brilliant. And it sets up a lot of the other scenes that we've already talked about. Because we see those social skills and the idea of him coaching her through her self-improvement, if you like, into figuring out how to be human. That's where we see the origin of it, and I just really like that. So that's one that was high on my reserve list. So another one that I had down is from the episode Infinite Regress, which is the episode where Seven starts to hear all these voices of all of the people that she's assimilated. In the past, or a load of voices from people that she's assimilated. And there's quite a few really interesting Seven Doctor scenes in that episode. But the one that I picked out is sort of towards the second half of the episode. They've had to sort of restrain her in sickbay because one of the personalities was getting quite violent. And he's sort of talking to her about the idea that they're going to try and do this mind meld with Tuvok to try and help solve the problem that she's got. And I really like this little scene where that she's lying there and he's sort of being very sweet with her. And then she sort of says, "Doctor, you've shown a great deal of patience," because she's been getting quite agitated. And then she sort of goes, and he's like, "Not at all." And then she says, "Inform the crew. I'm grateful for their efforts." And he says, "You'll be able to tell them yourself." I just really liked that little exchange there. That was really nice.
That is
well,
sweet.
That's a sweet moment. I mean, anytime we get to see Seven letting her guard down and being genuine is nice.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't happen very often, so we have to cherish it when it does.
Yes. So kind of along the lines of your little moment from Timeless, Zachary, that's just a really small moment. This is an even smaller moment in the episode Course Oblivion at the beginning when they have fake Balana and fake Tom's wedding. And Seven catches...
I loved that
Seven
wedding.
Catches the bouquet.
Fake Seven.
Fake Seven catches the bouquet.
Fake
Seven catches the fake bouquet. And the fake Doctor says, "Congratulations." To which fake Seven says, "Why?" And fake Tuvok replies, "You don't want to know."
That's brilliant.
And I just really liked it, despite all the fakeness.
Yeah, I could have done without the fakeness myself, but it is a very nice moment.
But your like of it is genuine like. It's not fake like of that.
It's genuine moment. Like of a fake moment, yes.
Just thought we'd clarify
good,
that.
Good, good. It's just as well, really, because I'm confused. But I like it because when the Doctor says... Sorry. Do I have to carry on doing it? No. When the Doctor says to Seven, "Congratulations," he's got this little smug look on his face. Like, haha, she will be mine. Only less sinister than I just said it, obviously.
Twirling his fake mustache.
Yeah.
Well, as we're wrapping up the show, do you guys have any final thoughts on The Doctor and Seven? How about you, Kay?
I think the thing that I like the most about The Doctor and Seven is the fact that a lot of the time we get some quite funny, quite tongue-in-cheek scenes from them. But they also do a lot of really intense scenes as well. And I feel like they do both equally well. I think they both work really well. And they transition between them sometimes within the same scene. And it's totally believable. And they just really work well together as characters. They just really relate well to each other. And when it's the two of them on screen, you always know whatever it's going to be a great scene. I think that's the thing that I took the most from this, because I went and rewatched quite a few scenes, and there were so many great scenes between the two of them. You know, of all the scenes that I watched, probably over half of them ended up on my list as really great scenes. So something magic happens when the two of them are on screen together.
How about you, Suzanne? Any final thoughts?
I mean, just the chemistry between the two characters works. And I think that's just because the actors can play off of each other so very well that it makes any time that they're on screen something you have to watch.
I think for me, because so many of the moments I pick between The Doctor and Seven are shipper moments, the fundamental question for me is, should they have gotten together? What would Voyager have been like had they decided to hook The Doctor and Seven up as a couple, as an item? And, you know, classically, of course, whenever you do that in a TV show, it ruins the dramatic tension, this, you know, relationship tension between the characters, and it kind of fizzles out and it doesn't really work. So Voyager is probably better with that not having happened. But on the other hand, it's fun to think about what it would have been like. And the shipper in me really wishes they would have gotten together. And that's, I think that's my final thought. I would like to have seen that alternate version of Voyager with the Doctor and Seven as an item and see what other brilliant scenes they would have written in that situation.
Yeah, that should have happened in Endgame.
Yeah.
Instead of what happened in Endgame.
It would have been a heck of a lot more believable.
Don't watch it.
Nothing that's relevant to what we talked about in this episode happened in Endgame. Let's just leave that there, shall we?
It's been fun talking about fake Seven and the fake Doctor, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
So it counts as saving Earth even though they really didn't do anything. They just kind of observed history, right? If anything,
were part of it, though. They wound up being part of it, right? They probably, in many ways, they interfered with the saving of Earth.
Right, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, they saved the day despite themselves.
Earl Grey.
I just, this week with my students, I'm a teacher, and what is so great about Star Trek? And isn't it like Star Wars? And I'm like, no, it is not. Let me tell you why. And that's always where I start. It's like, Star Trek, this is where we could be. It is someplace where we could end up going. You know, who knows? But it's our timeline. It's our potential future.
Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek.
We had many Ferengi, and they were all quite different. Nog and Rom and Brunt and Quark and the Grand Nagus and Moogie. They all had very different voices, very different worldviews. They were all characters in their own right, but they all fit into that culture.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We have some people that we'd like to thank. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek FM. We'd like to thank our executive producers, Charlene Schmidt, Matthew Rushing, and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And also, we'd like to give a shout out to our great associate producers, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, Brian Beliso, and Ju Kim.
Don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and to get your seat on the mission. Also check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
If you'd like to contact us, there are several ways you can do so. You can contact us via form on Trek FM's website. Just go to trek.fm/contact. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar on our To the Journey show page on the Trek FM website, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. On Twitter, we're under the handle @TrekFM, and on Facebook, we're just at facebook.com/TrekFM. And speaking of Facebook, find us in the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it'll come right up. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click Discussion on the menu bar. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of To the Journey on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, before we wrap up the show, Suzanne, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on the Trek FM network and around the interwebs?
Well, you can find me lurking about the Babel Conference, and you can also find me on Twitter. My handle is @KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Kay, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me in the Babel Conference, quite often in there, chatting to people. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is @ChocoWeeble. Zachary, if people want to find you so that they can talk to you about 1997 Academy Award winning film Titanic, where can they do that?
Well, when I'm not here on To the Journey, you can find me on Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy. And you can find me in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners only discussion group, if you want to talk about Star Trek with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, @ZacharyFruling.
So next week, we'll be back with Lesson 47, Social Skills for a Luxury Cruise. But until then, this has been To the Journey.